was it tied to the, do you remember the year, first off, when it happened?
Well, if that's the way we are, it's considered just a year before this incident. My dad's plant was set on fire. Burned the whole damn thing, $1 million worth of lumber. No insurance. Didn't get insurance on lumber. No. And the whole plant, and we just was rebuilding. The whole plant. It was definitely set on fire because the insurance men found the gasoline cans. They had it planned. By God, it was so thorough that we didn't have any idea at all. And we had these watchmen, we had two watchmen on, go around and plug these instruments they never have on. The station plugged them in. And the recorder would show that they had been there because they were all burned up. So we don't know whether they were in on it and there was no recording. We don't know. But we're just too far gone. In fact, on Saturday night we had a dance going on. I used to have an orchestra come up. So as to keep the men interested, something to do. But in those days, there were no roads or anything. Nothing but the passenger train. And once you got those men down in Seattle to go and hit in the bottle, you didn't have a crew back for Monday morning. So I tried to keep things going. Just like this place here, tries to keep something going. Poor old ladies around. That's the main ones. So they were just trying to, there were 11 big mills. You know, my dad is one of the largest inland mills in the state. Large ones on the water export ship. They were just trying to close down everything that
could. Who was they?
The Wobblies, as they call them. It was the IWW, the International Woodworkers. That was about as far as I could remember. The only union that was trying to organize the lumber workers, which was the largest employee of labor in the state. In those days.
Had there been labor trouble at your father's camps before? Had they been?
Oh, we'd had the small ones. They'd walk off the job.
What was the dispute about? What did they want that your father didn't want to give them?
Nobody could ever figure out what it was. I think mainly it was to, as I remember it now, was to get 10-hour to 8-hour day. That was when that started.
Mm-hmm.
As our wages, everybody was all logging camps, all mills had the same rate of pay. As things improved, my mill owner, log owner, and all get together. In those days, 5 or 10 cents an hour was a big increase in wages. Mm-hmm. They didn't ask for $1.60 an hour. But I think mainly it was sympathizers with the old German Kaiser, World War I government.
What do you mean sympathizers with the German Kaiser? The Wobblies were?
The Wobblies, yeah. They're sympathetic to, same as they were after World War II. There were lots of sympathizers with Hitler, you know. Everybody wasn't against Hitler, they're not yet.
Why would people who were socialists or communists be sympathetic with either Hitler or the Kaiser?
Well, we always called it the little communist, because communism was just coming in then. And that was, seemed to me, the big talk at that time.
So why would communists be sympathetic with the Kaiser or with Hitler? I don't know.
Well, yeah, you can tie that all together, I can't.
Uh-huh. Do you remember what year was that they burned your...
I'm talking
lumber?
About 1919.
Yeah. Was the year they burned it, or was the year that you...
They burned it in 1980.
Uh-huh. So this strike, you think, that you had told me about before, or this attempted strike. There was an attempted strike, right, at the camp the first year that you were in charge of it?
That's the way they had her closing it down, that's all.
Uh-huh, but it wasn't successful, that attempt?
No, because as I showed you before, we had the sheriff's office and these men up. Yeah, of course, if you remember, I told you about the draft evaders then, and that was 12 or 13 they picked up. But right after the war, everybody had to register. They had to register. And they never had registered. In this country, if they hadn't wanted to cause trouble, they'd have gone and registered. It was after the war. They still hadn't registered. But we were just one of, I think it was either 11 or 12 big mills that burned that year.
All of them, you think, burned down by the Wobblies?
Almost every case they could prove that they were set fires.
Mm-hmm. So do you remember... So it was a year after the burnings when you had this strike that you told me about.
Yeah,
up in your
camp.
Yeah,
we were rebuilding then. Uh-huh. We practically had the mill going again. In fact, it had been running, but no near capacity, but we were shipping our logs out and selling them. It was all my dad's timber. And, fellas in the logging in it hardly lost a day's time. We followed them than the mill did, except the ones we kept. See, we had a lot of married families. The single men had let go. And we rebuilt the mill with the married families.
Mm-hmm.
Our family were the ones that took the loss.
Uh-huh.
The men.
Pretty big loss.
$1 million.
That must have been a large amount at that time. I mean, even larger than now.
And I had lumber. We could see the price of lumber going up. And my dad said, let's cut the lumber and pile it up and get the top price we can, because we've been operating at a price that we've lost all during the war. The government had a price set on your timber, manufactured flour. It's too low. Like you put a price on how much we could charge a minute for meals, 35 cents a meal. Christ, you couldn't hope to come out even, but you couldn't charge you the 35 cents a meal. So I had 28 boxcars in that plant that night, just waiting to be loaded up. And you didn't even have to have an order. All you'd do is pour it in the car and send it to our Seattle office, and we had orders for anything that we put in the car. There was $1 million, that's $750,000 was in the plant on top of that.
So did that affect your negotiations with the Wobblies?
No, that was just what they wanted. They wanted everything to stop. Curtail production every way they could.
But didn't they want to do that as a way of threatening you? Or did they just want to stop production?
What else would it be?
Well,
it wouldn't hurt.
But they weren't doing it as a way of trying to force you to give them what they wanted or anything like that?
They never asked for anything. They weren't asking for any wage increase or anything.
Uh-huh.
It was just disruption. Yeah, the hell, I couldn't have picked one man out of that organization that didn't think my dad and my brother and I were first-rate employers. Not a one of them can pick up. Just one of those clear things. But you know, even the so-called educated people now, one man can agitate them and just get them to do anything.
So you think it was probably burned by people who weren't working in the camp at the time?
Well, it was somebody else besides. There's only one thing that, and by God, I never could pin this man down. But the night the mill burned, This one our man got off the train. Sister got off the train. And the next morning, nobody could find this fellow. And the only way to get out was hoof it to the next town to get a train, 5 miles. But we found out afterwards that these other mills had burned. There was a one-armed man.
Oh.
Did he mastermind it? But nobody knows. They never were able to find a one-armed man and pinpoint it.
So, do you remember in what month this was? Not the burning, but a year later, the strike.
All I know is in the fall. I probably was going to guess and say October.
So probably October of 1919 was when that strike started.
Uh-huh. I know it was in the fall.
Uh-huh. Were you there all year? At that time, were you in the camps all year, or were you ever in Seattle?
The weekends, I went to Seattle. My dad and I kept a room for the month or year, whatever you want to call it, at the Fry Hotel in those days. That was the main hotel.
Was it hard to get you back on Monday there, though?
Oh, I went back. We had a road within 17 miles of our plant, and there was a train. Night train had hit that town at 12 o'clock, and I'd drive back, and I had a garage there.
Uh-huh.
Parked that car. That was the year I got married, 1919.
Did your wife come up to the camp?
Beautiful home.
What's at the camp now?
What is?
Yeah.
Completely wiped out.
What's there?
Nothing.
Nothing at all?
No.
Not a parking lot or something?
There isn't anything there. It's just in the canyon, straight up and down the side.
No trees left at all?
Huh?
No trees left at all?
Well, they're way back, and that's being taken off by Scott Paper Company now, but they're coming in from the going east to the summit of Stampede Pass, and they're going right over across the top of the mountain, all the way down.
Uh-huh.
There's an easier grade in there, but they didn't have equipment to build roads like they have now.
Yeah.
We were doing it with steam locomotives. Those were the days.
Do you remember when you were in Seattle earlier in that year, 1919, around February? Do you remember the strike they had in the city itself? Do you remember the shipyard strike right after the war?
I remember that there was a strike, because we had been furnishing lots of lumber from the shipyard. We were one of the few mills in those days that were building the ships with the masts. And we were one of the few mills equipped with 110-foot masts.
Do you remember which shipyards you were furnishing?
I believe we furnished most of ours with Ames.
Okay. So when they had this shipyard strike right after the war, did Ames stop taking lumber?
Well, then we burned out.
Right about then.
We burned out in 1980. And by the time we had got that big plant rebuilt, the war was over. The shipyard was just about a thing at the end when the war ended. There wasn't hardly any of them continued.
So the demand went way down by the time you had built back up?
But the demand for lumber was all over the United States, not shipyards. That didn't mean a damn.
So
but you kind of, the logs that they needed for the shipyard is altogether different than common run of timber lumber that you need in hospitals. The stock we had on hand was, I'd say 95% just stock for building homes.
Uh-huh.
Midwest hadn't had any lumber for so long. That's what I say, you didn't have to have an order. You just poured it into the car.
So it didn't hurt you when the shipyards closed down, even though they had been using lumber? There was such a demand nationally.
It was just we happened to have these long, straight, tall trees. And it takes a powerful, perfect tree. It's got 110-foot bar that goes on a boat.
Do you remember at all the shipyard strike when it was happening, or the general strike that came out of it?
No, I really don't.
You weren't probably in the city?
No, I was just in the city on weekends.
Uh-huh, right.
It never bothered me because the trains ran. And all I wanted was to get from our mill down to where I had the car parked, and that was it.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So was there any other labor trouble that you had after that strike that you stopped with the police?
I can't remember other thing after that. I tell you, we were so isolated. Absolutely nothing but that table. Wasn't sitting.
Mm-hmm.
Got in there. And there were several other small mills up there, but they just were small, so they just had a certain amount of timber that the railroad sold in the center. And of course, today they wouldn't even think of putting a mill in. They'd throw it on a truck and away it'd go. They think nothing of it. Logged 100 miles today.
Did a union ever develop in your? Did you ever have a union in your mill after a while? But never.
They never bothered us. They just until that incident.
And after that, there was never any more trouble. You never, so a union never came into that mill?
We were never unionized until we finally logged off the rest of my dad's timber. He homesteaded timber. He had enough timber homesteaded. He could have gone on there indefinitely, but he had this heart attack, I guess I told you. I was 19 years old and he called me down to Tacoma. He was in the hospital. And he's attorney there. All the papers had gone up, giving me his power of attorney. And I ran that thing now. Then we had our wholesale office in Seattle. And when we logged off all the timber and all, I just pulled it up. The rest of us, we moved to Seattle.
What did you do after that?
I operated our wholesale office here. 18
From then
years
on.
We were there.
Uh-huh.
In the Oriental Skirt Building. Which is about gone now. Kind of hate to say the whole building dismantled.
So then have you spent most of your life working with lumber either in the camps or wholesale?
I had a mill out at Kenmore in Lake Washington.
When was that?
And that burned down too.
For the same reason?
No, I was buying it on a lease. I had leased it. It was a co-op mill. And it failed, and the barber attorneys took a hold of it. And I knew one of them real well, and he said, Ed, why don't you not lease that mill? We've got to do something with it. So I did. But I had an option to buy it and all, and it was just before Pearl Harbor. And this attorney was running it himself, because I didn't have the lease I wanted. I wanted a lease so that I could buy it. And believe it or not, I had the lease in my pocket when I went out. He still wanted me to sell a lumber. So I was selling lumber. I went up and drove up and hit the damn thing was burned to the ground. But they never did anything with this attorney. Didn't get until they set it on fire.
Yeah.
But he had Japs working for him. He was running it with the Japanese. And this was the morning after Pearl Harbor. Pearl Harbor was on Sunday, Monday morning. By the time I got out there, hell, it was police and sheriffs all over hauling in these Japs.
But you think he did it for the insurance, huh?
Yeah, but he didn't quite figure it out right. The plant was so built, the mill was here, and the planing mill was way over here, and the power plant was way over there. Nothing but the mill burned and left all the other stuff.
So did the police think it was sabotage at first?
That's what it was. There's no question whether it was. They figured that the owner, he was a different attorney. He was disbarred right after. They never did anything. He didn't get enough insurance out of it, and the insurance company tried to do anything. They just settled for what they did and left it. What was that? Damn nice little mill. I wanted it. And I, as I say, I had the lease in my pocket. Also, just exactly what I wanted.
Hey, do you already know the Pearl Harbor had been bombed? When you went out there, did you already know the Pearl Harbor had been bombed?
Oh, sure.
So did that make that mill a lot more worthwhile?
I listened to it on the radio.
So that did that make that mill worth a lot more all of a sudden? Did you think there was going to be a big demand?
If it hadn't burned, I would have made a small fortune on it. Right in the city, almost. It's a big sand and gravel outfit bought the property. There they are now. Well, I've been through the mill. But it's like my dad said, I mean, we lived with his original mill was at Leicester. That was quite a town in Leicester. That's where they, in the old time, they were steam engine, and all the railroad had to put an extra halter or two to get over the hill. So we had maybe upstream my dad's mill along the railroad, we had a population of about 800-900 people. So, for a little town. The railroad mill town, it was a little town. All his timber was located 5 miles away of this town of Leicester. And the railroad company put a little station in there. One day, my dad and I were on the train coming back from Seattle. And we got off, we looked up into the little station, there was a name on it, the name of the town, Nagron, N-A-G-R-O-N. What in heck is going on here with the railroad guy? And we didn't realize at the time that it was Morgan spelled backwards. So that, I got lots of maps still showing. But when the mill was gone, there was nothing there. There may eventually be lots and lots of timber in there, but I see in the day we were there. It was a case of pushing a train up the side of the hill like that to get to the top of the hill to get the logs. And they were steep. We had one runaway there that killed 5 men. So steep. A new engineer on his second foot down, and they gave him too heavy a load. And he just got away from him. We lost 5 men that day. And I went up over that. There was another big track of timber in there. The Northern Pacific owned, and they sold it to the south. And they put a log in there, and they had these big earth moving machines. You know? And they just loaded it, and they used part of our old road. And I went up there one time. But we had a store in connection with my mill. My dad started a store there, because you had to have a store wherever you had a mill, if you had a family. And we had that store there for 54 years. I think we were the longest post office out there, so under the same name. When my dad died, but they just automatically put my uncle in, who was running the store for my dad, put him in as postmaster. And to show you, I was supposed to be retired when I was 65. Well, the little town was isolated and everything went along all right. The inspectors come up every so often, which they do. Check out each one and make sure all the money was intact. Although you send it in every month. But they did that.
Yeah.
And my uncle was 84 years old and he died, and he was supposed to be retired at 65. And I happened to be there because I called the post office. The inspector told him what happened. And there would be nobody in that building anymore for the post office. So they agreed to take the same train up there. And close it up. Until finally, somebody, other than that party, I wanted to buy the store. I was just going to close it up. So I hauled out everything out of it that's any value. Like old coffee was, you couldn't buy coffee at all. And here this baron of uncle mine had 144 pounds of coffee, tin can. And I went up and I took it. And I finally turned around and I said, well, you can look at what's left in here.
That baby.
Maybe just odds and ends.
And she was going to have the baby.
Oh, stuff like that. The building wasn't worth
it. Baby.
And he said, well, how much you want for it? And I said, you give me $400 cash and you can have the whole thing.
And I said, I bet you give it a little.
Except the land, that's on Northern Pacific land. So that's be $1 a year rent.
I don't know. I hope.
And you know what? That guy came in the office, a couple of days off, they were pulling it out.
He looked like a
dude. He got some papers going on. And he ran the guy in the store and the post office department, put him in the postmaster. And he ran it for another 15 years at least. Finally, they got these new Lokis, these diesel powered Lokis, and now they don't stop for helpers anymore. They're just and they're trying to get the railroad to make this old Lester Railroad Station and historical. That on the main line of the Burlington North now. Whether they will or not, I don't know. But it was one of the first real railroad stations built on the Mr. Vision, Pacific Coast Division.
And I have to be with
that, I just got rid of everything I had. 54 years I had that stuff. General merchandise. I handled every thing from soup to nuts. So a real old time you to your
head. Well,
anything else you remember from those days, from right around 1919 and the labor troubles then?
All I could know is that the only incident we had. We just dwelt it so that like that. But, I think it took about two more years before we finished that cutting.
The older ones.
And since, I'm sorry, I hadn't done anything about reforestation. I let 2,500 acres and logged off land go just for taxes. I let it revert back to the county. Taxes. And a lot of them thought, one tract, 640 acres. We cut 110 million feet off of that one tract, which is one of the largest sections in the state of Washington. Anyway. If I had hung on to that and the log off land taxes and the amount of money for that 640 acres, it might have been $25 a year. And had reforested that, it would have been a hell of a big money maker for my two boys and any of their family forever.
What did they do?
One of them, my older boy, is a. And another fellow in business here for a long time. All kinds of
stuff. That's all I can do.
Well, I handled plant, Black and Decker line of tools and stuff like that. And they had a beautiful business, but along comes one of these big outfits. The boy of mine, his partner, getting all the business. And this big outfit came in. And they made an offer that they couldn't turn down.
My
and they sold.
Were not that kind of
so So they borrowed him to run the place for him, and he did for a year, and then...
I didn't know that.
He never worked for anybody. So he went in there, he bought some water, over in Mercer Island, built it, an investment, and it was cheap. He went in a home building. Yeah, he's been at it for 20 years now. About all he's doing now are these $125,000, $150,000 homes. And this thing, whoever saw your wife, he's putting an addition on a house over there in Mercer Island. The addition, $80,000. And the other boy is a musician, and he teaches. He doesn't give a damn about money. He makes plenty.